Mr. Galati, welcome to our show and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
What is the declared purpose of Bill C-36?
What is the declared purpose?
That's right.
Well, it purports to be an anti-terrorism law, and in a small measure, it is in fact that. But unfortunately, it's much more than that, and there is an overly broad and hidden agenda to C-36, which is very, very disturbing. Parts of C-36 were in fact drafted long before September 11th, and the bill purports to be reacting to the events of September 11th in New York City. However, for instance, the deregistration of charities, which was C-16, we know was on the table last year, and hearings were heard in May and July of 2001. The bill itself, as it is disturbing in its severely overly broad characterization of what constitutes a terrorist act. So your listeners should know and should be shocked to know that illegal and illegal strikes and work stoppages, consumer and market boycotts, anti-globalization protests, and general dissent are defined as terrorist acts within the bill.
Are these defined as terrorist acts specifically?
Well, by logical reading of the definition of a terrorist act, mm-hmm. if you want me to refer to it, it states that it includes a conspiracy attempt or threat to commit any act or omission, but does not include an act or omission that is committed during. That is illegal. Is lawful advocacy, protest, dissent, or stoppage of work. It says lawful. So illegal strikes that cause any property damage, that interfere with public facilities, including economic security, are defined by definition as terrorist acts. Mm-hmm. Now, a legal strike can also be a terrorist act if it interferes with essential services and the use of public facilities. Now, it's hard to imagine any protest or even legal strike that goes out onto the street in terms of picket lines and mass protests that's not going to interfere with public facilities in terms of roads and whatnot.
So it's really open to interpretation here.
No, it's quite clear. If you disrupt the economic order and if you cause property damage or if you interfere with essential service facility or system, whether public or private, it's a terrorist act. There's no interpretation about it. It's quite clear. It catches political dissent.
Turning to what the government is claiming this act is meant to do, what effect do you think that this will have on actual terrorist activities, on things that perhaps everyone could agree are terrorist activities? Will this work to actually make Canada safer?
Well, I have my doubts. In some of the cases I've done under the Immigration Act as counsel, I've cross-examined CSIS officers, and they have admitted under cross-examination that there is no expert evidence to show that dealing with terrorists by way of secret trials, as this bill is going to do, by way of forfeiture of property and jailing people in secret trials through an atmosphere of fear, anxiety, and paranoia is more efficient than dealing with terrorism in a free and open society. In fact, examples tend to go to the contrary. Egypt in 1981, after the assassination of Anwar Sadat, imposed an emergency law, which they said was going to be temporary, but which is still on the books. In the 20 years in Egypt, the problem of terrorism has multiplied 1,000-fold. They have a much worse terrorism problem today after 20 years of emergency legislation than they did in 1981. So clearly it does not work necessarily.
Mm. Given these examples, why is the Canadian government taking these steps? Why have they drafted this bill?
I think quite frankly that this bill does have laced in it a conscious and unacceptable attempt to stifle political dissent, and they are trying to monopolize on the unfortunate and abominable events in New York City on September 11th. It's my view and the view of some of the clients I represent that it is immoral to talk about stifling economic order and employment, work stoppages, and public protest under the guise of stopping the kind of terrorist attack that New York suffered on September 11th. They are simply taking advantage of the situation to slide through an omnibus bill that's going to get rid of all our civil liberties as we've known them from the Magna Carta up to the Canadian Charter of Rights. A lot of these provisions are unacceptable. For instance, they can arrest you and detain you without charge for 72 hours and do this on a revolving door. So you come out and then they pick you up again. Well, that's martial law. You do not have a right to be presumed innocent. You have to answer questions. Your right to silence, to self-incrimination, to arbitrary arrest. They all go out the window.
Mr. Galletti, in the Bill C-16, there was a clause about the evidence. What is the now new status of the evidence presented in this bill?
This bill uses the same procedure as the current immigration and charity law terrorism bill. That is, Canadian citizens, let's be clear, it's not just brown-skinned Muslims and Arabs who are foreigners now. Canadian citizens are going to have their property seized and forfeited and are going to be charged, convicted, and sentenced to jail without ever seeing the actual evidence against them. The evidence against them will only be seen by the judge and presented to the prosecutor. It will be suppressed based on national security.
And where would they get this evidence?
Often, rumor, innuendo, other countries, dictatorships. So Egypt says, we know this guy is a terrorist, but you never get to see. That's the evidence they're getting.
So really, this is going to give the government sweeping powers over individuals.
This bill is going to give the government the same power that the king in France had with lettres de cachet before the French Revolution. This power, this bill essentially takes us back to medieval church inquisition in terms of an absence of civil rights and charter rights.
Now, we know that some civil groups are concerned about this bill, but perhaps the media hasn't presented it the way you are talking about it, so we're really kept in the dark here.
Well, there's nothing to be kept in the dark about. I'm quite upset at not only the MPs and the various professional bodies, but also at the media, that nobody, and I say this with all due respect to all of them, very few people have actually sat down to chew over the bill. All they've done is digested summaries of the bill from various groups. But if you read the actual bill, it's clear as a bell that a lot of this bill has nothing to do with terrorism. For instance, they've amended the Official Secrets Act to describe an act that's prejudicial to the safety or interests of the state to include if a person, and I'm quoting here, adversely affects the stability of the Canadian economy, the financial system, or any financial market in Canada without reasonable economic or financial justification, end quote. So if a person calls for a boycott of a publicly traded company or a stock market on ethical, environmental, or other reasons that it's not reasonably economic or financial, that is an act of terrorism. This is how far this bill goes.
And what was the inspiration behind it? I mean, the Canadian government and our Canadian laws were known to be for being very liberal and progressive. And suddenly, I would say, overnight, we go to the other extreme. So this must have been a process developing over some period of time. Can you explain to me what happened?
Yes, it's very clear that the government has taken the opportunity to put a clause in this bill that makes it easier to push forward without any dissent its globalization agenda over economic treaties. If you read this bill, a lot of what is there is meant to stifle APEC protests, Quebec City protests, anti-logging protests, native rights protests, all to pave the way for complete and unmitigated non-resistance to globalization. Because a lot of these provisions are strictly economic crimes that one sees in a dictatorship. And so there is absolutely no basis for these provisions with respect to not being able to, for instance, call for a boycott on anything but reasonable economic and financial justification. What does that have to do with violent terrorist attacks? Absolutely nothing. So people should be seeing through this bill. Now, RCMP Commissioner Tsarkardelli was asked and reported to have replied the other day, could this anti-terrorism bill have been used against the protesters in Quebec City? And he said, although he didn't think he would, yes, it could have been used against the protesters. Well, there's your answer right there. How do peaceful protesters at an anti-globalization protest come under as terrorists?
Well, it's really of great concern now that we understand more about the bill. Since you're talking about globalization and financial issues, can you tell us how the bill will deal with the money that charitable organizations can channel to other parts of the country or outside the country? Because I understand it gives the government control over.
Yes. Well, what it does is it fully implements the terms of C-16, which is the charities legislation. And what basically it means is that any organization or person whose resources, any part of their resources, directly or indirectly, and this is another part of the language that's offensive in this bill, directly or indirectly, ends up in the hands of any terrorist organization or persons or supporters, whether the organization or person that forwards the resources knows or not, then you're caught as a facilitator of terrorism. There is a criminal sanction here for facilitators of terrorism, and in the definition, it states that you are guilty of facilitating terrorism whether you had knowledge or not, which goes contrary to the very essence of criminal liability in Canada, common law, and under the Charter. In order to be criminally liable for any offense in our tradition and in our law, you have to have knowledge and intent. Now, this law is saying, no, even if you don't know that you're helping terrorists, you're guilty anyway. And when we put you on trial, we won't necessarily give you all the evidence as to why you're guilty, even though you didn't know you were helping them. Now, I mean, I'm not exaggerating when I say these are provisions that one would expect in a police state, not a constitutional democracy like Canada.
Mr. Galati, are there enough lawyers in Canada that are objecting to this bill because it seems like it's rushing through Parliament, it's gaining the agreement of the public because it's under the banner of fighting terrorism and this is a sensitive issue now, but how about professionals?
Well, professionals can only do so much. I mean, you know, when professionals make their submissions, there's often a cynical sort of hesitancy to listen to them because they're regarded as professionals and this is what they do. Sure, civil libertarians are speaking out against this bill, but the people who are supposed to make the government publicly accounting, and I, for instance, I cite the accountable, I cite the press, and I cite even in the MPs themselves, and I have to say this with respect, I find the MPs in Ottawa on this issue cowardly and lazy. Most of the ones I have spoken to or have been dealing with or hear on TV, it is obvious to me that they have not read the bill. Mm. People read summaries, but they're not reading the bill. Otherwise, they would be alarmed.
Within Parliament, it seems that the strongest dissent is people who are urging that there be a sunset clause. What do you think? How would sunset clauses make this a better bill, or would they affect it in any way?
Well, it would certainly make the bill temporary in its gouging and devastating our civil liberties, but even a sunset clause is not enough. What needs to be done to this bill is all reference to civil dissent, economic dissent, protest has to be removed from here as a terrorist act. It's immoral and offensive that we can say that our our cherished constitutional rights to freedom of expression and economic issues are terrorist acts. Second of all, certain of these provisions, like the arbitrary arrest, preventive arrests, should not be part of the general criminal law. They should be transferred over into the Emergencies Act. These are emergency provisions where there's mechanisms under the Emergencies Act that these kinds of arrests and these kinds of procedures are continually monitored by a parliamentary committee. There's a report on the activities and who would be arrested, how many people are being arrested, and so that there's parliamentary supervision. To make preventive arrests as part of your general police powers turns your society into a permanent police state.
Mr. Galati, I understand that in the States, Amnesty International is concerned about the possibility that pressure techniques, in other words, torture, may be used while questioning detainees. What is the situation with this new bill? You mentioned that they can detain people, keep them for 72 hours, and then through revolving door policy, they would be out with no excuses and no explanation given. What happens during those 72 hours? I mean, is there something to safeguard the rights of the detainees?
Well, just on your earlier point, Not only is there talk that of abuses, but in fact, the FBI, there's talk within the United States of requesting legal permission to torture. That's come out in the last 2 weeks. I hope to God that that's never granted by Congress, but that's where that discussion is. With respect to what safeguards are there, well, what safeguards can there be? If you get arrested without any arrest, if you can be detained without cause for 72 hours without being told why, and you're held incognito for 72 hours, and then you're released, and then you can be picked up 2 hours later for another 72 hours, and then again and again. Well, I find that to be a form of torture, don't you?
I was astonished to even be able to read in the Globe and Mail that they'd called various experts at universities and that people were seriously contemplating and discussing what would happen if someone tortured. I found it incredible that people felt able to discuss as though it was somehow reasonable that possibly in this circumstance we could torture people. How have we even got to the point where legal experts feel that we could even discuss the idea that we might be able to torture people in some circumstances?
Well, look, legal experts in Nazi Germany discuss the issues of what kind of experiments could be physically conducted, right?
Mm.
There's your answer. I mean, how could we? It's immoral. There are international treaties and conventions against torture, even in wartime. You're not supposed to torture prisoners of war. How can we be discussing torture, even rationally, in peacetime in a free and democratic society, even in the wake of a terrorist threat? We make it sound like terrorism was just born on September 11th.
Mm.
Various free and democratic societies have dealt with the abomination of terrorism without relinquishing all civil liberties and all civil rights.
What kind of measures have they taken? What are some examples?
Well, I mean, you have to take police action, intelligence gathering, and you have to stomp it out for what it is. It's a vicious criminal act for political, economic, religious, and social reasons. But it does not warrant the complete suspension of the entire system of government that we have, the entire system, the entire society that's evolved in the West. Otherwise, those 19 murdering terrorists in New York City, in one act of terrorism, have succeeded in removing the civil rights and civil liberties of 300 million North Americans that took 700 years from the Magna Carta to the Charter of Rights in Canada to attain through centuries of struggle. Isn't that what North America stood for, was the land of freedom? Isn't that what people from all over the world immigrated here to do, was to escape police states and oppressive regimes right up until the Second World War in Europe and come here where we had established a country built on civil liberties and civil rights and constitutional norms and constitutional democracy? What, we lost that overnight? Are we mad?
It's really very serious, and I'm wondering what could be done now. The Minister of Justice says, well, we are flexible, we could amend the bill, but what are we going to do? I mean, who's going to act now, and how do we make our voices heard?
I think people have to contact their MPs. People have to be loud and clear about their objection. I applaud the government for moving to criminalize specifically acts of terrorism, and I applaud the government for moving to criminalize the financing of terrorism. But they should be doing so as part of our general criminal law, not some secret police state procedure unto itself, which is what this bill is. We as a free and open society, like the Italians and the French and the Spanish, can deal with terrorism and still maintain our civil liberties.
Now, you mentioned that some countries, and you gave an example, Egypt, have introduced new laws, and of course we know that those new laws didn't work. But if we go to some European countries, you mentioned France, do you think they introduced new laws after some terrorist attacks that happened there recently? How did they deal with situation?
Well, I'm not familiar with all their provisions, but I know, for instance, I'm more familiar with the Italian experience that such drastic laws were not implemented. Security measures that were implemented in Italy were later regretted. Terrorism has been around for a long time. You know, it's North America has now become the victim of it recently. Europeans have been dealing with it. Societies have been dealing with it. We don't need secret provisions and secret trials. We don't need to revert to tribalism and star chambers to deal with terrorism. We know historically what that leads to. And Benjamin Franklin is quoted to have said that those who would trade in their liberties for security deserve neither liberty nor security, nor will they attain either.
Mr. Galletti, it seems that those terrorist acts, they were motivated politically, and now we are rushing to introduce measures like that have to do with law. They're not meeting any grievances. They're not looking at a political situation. Is our government grasping this difference, that there is a difference between a politically motivated act and a criminal act?
Well, I'm a lawyer. I'm not a politician, and I'm not a philosopher. So I'm not qualified to get into the broader philosophical issues of the underlying policies of terrorism and all of that. Suffice it to say that I have, on behalf of several clients in making representations, come up with a one-line definition, a universal definition, I think, of what terrorism is. And in my view, terrorism is a criminal matter. And I define terrorism as the threat or use of violence and arms by an armed group or individual against an unarmed group or individual for political, racial, religious, social, or economic reasons, including state terrorism. Anytime an armed individual terrorizes or inflicts violence on an unarmed, innocent civilian individual or group, that's terrorism. And that is a criminal matter. Now, I'm not qualified to deal with the larger pictures in the world and the geopolitical conflicts, but all I know is that as a constitutional lawyer, that this bill, under the guise of dealing with criminals who attacked in New York City, murderers who terrorized New York City, is actually suppressing the civil liberties of all Canadians for economic and social and political reasons that have nothing to do with a violent threat against Canadians. Some of the provisions deal with terrorism as we understand it and as we need to deal with it in the face of New York on September 11th. A lot of these other provisions are just to keep Canadian citizens under a screw without any of their civil liberties that they've enjoyed and up to the Canadian Charter of Rights. This bill is scary in its blanket removal of our civil liberties.